This talk was given by Michel Segay Spark at Zen Mountain Monastery. Segay is a senior lay student in the Mountains and Rivers Order. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered free of charge. If you would like to make a donation or find out more about our various programs, visit us online at zmm.org. Thanks for listening.
So, welcome everybody to the Sunday talk. We have a lot of new people here. Welcome to the new people for the first time, our residents, and to the people who came for retreat with Arowana on movement and the senses. And welcome to everyone zooming in from wherever you are. Hello. So, as Taikyo said, my name is Segay. I'm a senior lay student in the Mountains and Rivers Order. And I've spent many years in silence here, so talking is newish, although I do a lot of talking. Gokhan Osho asked me to give the talk today because Shugen Roshi is away with our Sangha in New Zealand. So here we are in the middle of summer. I love summer. It is so lush, fleeting, celebratory, and wise. It informs so much of our lives, especially in nature. If you just step outside, and nature is everywhere. Granted, it's a little more noble in the Catskills. it's suddenly where our senses are receiving everything. And I'd like to actually focus on that a bit as part of our practice, as part of Buddhist practice. Often in Buddhist teaching, we're focusing on the mind. The mind is much broader than our thinking or even our mind. It's our senses, our body, our breath, and these things are also intricately linked. For me, the sounds of summer are incredible. I love hearing, and I look forward to this every year, the white-throated song sparrow, which I found out about on Merlin, the Merlin app, comes every year to my neighborhood and sings its heart out for weeks at a time. And then suddenly, one day, it's completely gone. And it's so precious, and it awakens me to the impermanence of everything, including me, even though I don't want to realize that. So even the weather in the Catskills is unknowable. We get predictions and, 20% rain means 20% of the geographical area will get 100% rain, and that's right here. So it's amazing. But this movement and change is really a teaching for us, and our senses can take that in. And especially in Zazen, because we're actually quieting down the more activity, putting together an integrating mind, and we're just being. We can feel those things, the sensations, the sounds, even the sights on the floor, our body. So one thing I wanted to share with you is about the evening. The sounds in the evening are very different, of course, but they get louder because in the darkness, I think there must be some science to this, but who knows? They rise up and you just really hear this chorus. I live on a creek, and so I hear the creek much more loudly, more rushing in the evening, along with the crickets and the frogs. And I brought a sound that I really want to share with you which is so, well, I'm not going to say. So bear with me, because I'm using a device, and it'll take me a sec to get it. So I'm not saying anything about the sound right now. Okay, let me just make sure it's turned up. Yep. Thank you. That's my Dharma talk. I'm done. So we all shared in that sound. We're all breathing the same air. I heard that sound every night. I'm going, what is that? It was so wonderful. I mean, that's a recording, but it was coming through the air, like across the creek. I mean, it must have been far away. What is that? And of course, my mind was going, what is that? What is it? So, you know, we interpret everything, right? We don't immediately stay with that lovely experience. So I looked it up, and I will share what that is. And I'm using this as an example of how we take in the world, our own body world, and maybe quickly, maybe too quickly, start interpreting our experience and naming it, which is fine. It's a gift, and it helps us function. But we can also slow down and just experience the sensation. And what does that do to our consciousness? So this particular sound, turns out, it's this little being that's this big. I think it was like close to an eighth of a mile away from me across the creek. It's a little tree frog, this big, invisible in the day. And it's bleeding its heart out for its a mate. Come have a date with me, please. So when I found that out, of course, I dwelled on that for a while and then went back to enjoying. So Buddhism, so I'd like to focus on, as I said, that part of our practice. Often in these talks, we focus on the struggle of ourselves and that me quality that gets in the way of a direct life, but today I'd like to continue with that, and how we use our breath to inform what we're actually experiencing. The breath can actually tell us so much about our experience that our mind might not be cognizant of. And briefly, I'll just mention that Buddhism talks about certain kinds of consciousnesses, and that changed over time. So I'm not going to go into big detail, but basically you have the five sense consciousnesses and then the mind consciousness, and later they kind of started looking at the nature of the mind consciousness and how it's different and has different components. So we have ear, nose, tongue, body, and mind. And then our mind consciousness, which, if you wanted to simply divide it, a basic awareness that is not always knowable. So we call that the storehouse consciousness, where the seeds of everything, past karmic seeds and future potentials, reside. It's a little blurry to me, so I can't really explain it to you fully. But anyway, it's part of us. And then we have our amazing conceptual integrative consciousness that we apply so diligently. Right. In the consciousness of clinging, which I guess is also part of the conceptual mind, we have the ego, and that's where the me, mine, of clinging, aversion, and neutral. I'm thinking that you all heard about those things because it's part of the first noble truth of suffering in Buddhism. So please bear with me while I get through this. We'll get to the senses. But in Zazen, basically, we're sitting down on our cushions, completely sitting down as a body, the breath we use as a tool to focus, and then our minds, right? And oddly, it's different than everyday activity. We're sitting down first with our body, our breath, and then our mind. Normally, like everyday activities, we might actually have the master controller thinking, I have to do such and such, and then take a breath, oh, and then the body follows, you know, leads the way, is following the mind. So it's a little bit of a different way of being. And in that, we're also asking ourselves to be physically still and to start to see what the mind does with that, especially when you first start practice, it's awfully jumpy and nervous and twitchy and restless. And guess what? And after many years of practice, it's often jumpy, nervous, and twitchy. So it's just the nature of our way of releasing and relaxing. We have more experience as if you sit for long enough, so you start to just more or less accept sort of that kind of nature of getting into the layers. Okay. And it's in this stillness that we have real access, or more access to a more subtle way of being. As I mentioned, our senses actually, maybe actually feel the air on our skin and the hairs kind of stand up. We normally don't notice that, no. Okay. So back to this me a little bit, just a little bit, because it's important. In the talking about the first noble truth of suffering, and actually I would like to mention that the Tibetans practice often speak about that first noble truth as we all want to be happy and we want everyone to be happy, and then we suffer because we're not. So it starts with wish and desire to be more at ease. There's three kinds of suffering, and I will speak about mostly the first one, which is the more physical facts of our life, that we will die, that we know that cognizantly, and that is the old age, sickness, and death. These were spoken of as the messengers that Shakyamuni encountered when he left the palace. He was quite discontent in some ways. He must have been, because he wanted to see what's out there. He ran into someone sick, someone old, and dying or dead. And then a fourth messenger was the monk, giving him an inkling that there's a path to discover all this. The second and third forms of suffering I'll just mention are change, constant movement that we're experiencing in this wonderful summer. Constant change, our thoughts constantly changing. Nothing solid, nothing really fixable or solid. And our condition, our relationship to our conditioned, what they call conditioned existence. And these are our habitual responses of the me, ego, clinging, me, I don't like this, I like this, neutral, and the self-involvement kind of thing. So back to the first form of the physical suffering. This is our dilemma, because we have this cognizance. We can even experience it vicariously in our loved ones getting old, sick, and dying. But we don't actually know what that is until it happens to us. We don't actually know getting old till we're actually old, starting to actually get into that, and our bodies are aging. We don't actually know sick like the froggy, you know, we don't actually know that till we're actually experiencing something that's making us feel ill on a literal level. And dying, we don't know death. But that is such an anxiety that it drives us completely. It's like the ground shaking, and we know there's a crack in it, and we know we're going to fall into it. We just don't know when. And so we live there. We kind of anticipate and get really anxious and worried. Some families are a little more anxious than others. I came from a very anxious family. Just saying, that I really know. Okay. So in Zazen, it's a tool to really allow us to not go into that anticipatory anxiety and to experience just just this time, right, together. It's sort of wonderful because we forget how to do that. We knew it. We've done it before. We do it, have done it, are doing it. Maybe we're not noticing it, but to actually make it a practice and a whole complete part of our lives is just amazing because it'll then filter in. It'll filter in the rest of your time. And so I was wondering about, because of all this sense data, so-called, this feeling about perceptions, what is it like to sit and before you formulate, like I did with the tree frog, like, oh, I heard it was wonderful. And then, boom, I've got to go find out about it. Oops, sorry. You know, what is it like to sit in that pure perception? Just the senses coming in without any interpretation, without taking it somewhere and making a meaning out of it. Because, you know, when you do that, it lessens the experience. So just on a pure cognitive level, just on that level alone, if you can get to that point and just relax enough where that happens, something shifts. Your consciousness changes, at least in my experience, okay? So, and one reason I'm very interested in this pure perception is because I'm a person with impaired perception, with my sense faculties are impaired. I'm half deaf and more than half blind. And so what I do have, I really humbly appreciate. And I can share two effects of this that might be interesting to you. The blind part of me is always present, but my mind doesn't know it. It's always there. It's like the creek that's always there. I don't know it. The only way I know it is when I bump into stuff. Oh, I can't see. Right, so there's an ignorance. That's why it's called blindness, deafness, muteness. It's not a functional action. It's not a knowable experience in the way we know through our actual functional perceptions. And secondly, because I wanted to survive, I had to develop acute awareness of what I was perceiving and how I was perceiving. So I had to learn how to interpret everything. Oh, it's appearing like this. Oh, that must be blah, blah, blah. And for most people with normal, I'm going to make an assumption, more normal sight, there's a certain amount of automatic in that. They see something, the brain's hooked up, and boom, they know what it is. It's just so fast, okay? And I'll describe. So I had to consciously interpret everything because it's not my seeing. Even the seeing I have isn't accurate. So I... early on, I realized that I was perceiving differently, but that I shared the world. And that sort of set me apart in a way, but also joined me, because I was knowing that I had these perceptions. And this kind of describes perfectly our dilemma of our experience. We share the air we breathe. We share the air we breathe with creatures and trees and ground. But we have a personal experience. And it's interesting in practice how that personal experience expands outward to include the world that we can perceive. And it broadens our view of ourselves, too. It helps with practice. So I'd like to use this little example of something like this, how we're always interpreting our senses. So take something like a white coffee mug on a table. We all know what that is. We share the concept of that. My eyes see, especially if it's a little bit distant, in light like this, a shimmering curtain of colors. It's not really what I would call white, that has no boundaries and is in a shimmering surroundings with no edges. But when I grab hold of it, it feels hard and smooth. And I think maybe most people might feel that. So that's an example. So what is that mug? Is it the same mug or different? Is it the same mug you know, or is it the one I know? And that question seems to perplex us in our separating of ourselves from each other. But a well-known, lovely teacher named Ajahn Chah said, the cup is already broken. It has not to do with the same or different. It's already broken. What can that mean? You know, I kind of wrote what that could mean. And I decided, I think you should figure it out. but it's a wonderful little koan to carry around. Cup is already broken. Here it is. The cup is already broken. Here it is. Anyway, in this exploration of senses, I read most of, it's very dense, this amazing book called An Immense World, How Animal Senses Reveal the Hidden Realms Around Us by Ed Yong, who's a science writer. And the book goes through different creatures, sound, light, vibrations, magnetic field, touch. And because we have more sophisticated instruments of study, we're beginning to realize the particularities of each creature's sense experience, which is so different and vast from ours. And he says something very Buddhist in this. He says, all is not as it seems, and that everything we experience is but a filtered version of everything that we could experience. So we sit down with a lot of assumptions about ourselves in Zazen. You know, our mind just percolates up and whatever is the latest view, we put it forth. But to remember that all is not as it seems, and then I'm filtering something, and what is that true? I mean, is it really true? To really relax into that experience. So to be careful about the conclusions we make. And it's interesting because Buddhist practitioners have been exploring what Ed Yong says scientists are exploring 2,500 years ago. So this is coming out of our own ability to have insight into our minds. He says something really beautiful. Earth teems with sights and textures, sounds and vibrations, smells and tastes, electric and magnetic fields. And this is the way creatures, animals, connect to each other and their surroundings through expressions, displays, gestures, calls, and currents. And human beings have, of course, language. And thinking as in this whole realm. When I read that, I'm thinking, oh yeah, that tree frog, what's a hot date, you know, every night. And they go on for 4 hours, this little thing. And it's totally relaxed in the sound. It's just a very beautiful trill, rhythmic breathing. He also says, every animal can only tap into a small fraction of reality's fullness. Each is enclosed within its own unique sensory bubble, perceiving but a tiny sliver of an immense world. So, in our practice, we might not know everything. We might not be able to control everything. But we can allow ourselves to feel what we're feeling and not push it away. We can allow ourselves to sense what we're feeling and not deny it. Ben Connolly says, it helps to know that our basic awareness perceives what it perceives is unknown, because it can remind us that what we are seeing, what we believe to be reality right now, is actually deeply and unknowably conditioned by our unconscious tendencies. This can help us to let go when we are trying to control things. So as we step back and let go in Zazen and quiet the still, more thinking, active mind, our body may show us some restlessness, tension. Our breath might show us anxiety or sadness. We might feel ungrounded and a little shaky when we're not able to think, you know, when we're actually allowing that we're purposefully concentrating on letting that go. We might actually feel a little ungrounded, like, what should I be doing? I'm not doing something. So I say to you all, just be courageous. It's okay not to think. It's great to just feel. And if things come up, like a little bit of fear, anxiety, that's okay. You're not going to die right there. If you feel restless, try to just recognize that you're feeling restless, because otherwise you're going to create some physical tension or emotional tension. And underneath something, and we are the type of beings that feel emotions. I don't go there with the animals, because I don't really know. I don't know anything about that, but maybe Ed Yong does. In many ways, when we sit down to do Zazen, what's happening is we're releasing all the protection, all the armor. It's coming off. It's falling off. It's being set down. And what we end up seeing is how much we're protecting our hearts, our true hearts, of feeling lonely or disconnected, a little sad, some hurt from the past. And that's okay, because it's part of us. You know, in that feeling, we're also yearning to connect, yearning to love. So that's really the aspect that, in feeling these deeper, more difficult feelings, turns us and opens us to the world and to each other. It's such a mystery, isn't it? Really. So there's a lot of joy there. There's a lot of joy there, even in that releasing and getting a little shaky, feeling a little sad, a little brokenhearted. There's joy in that, really. Our founder of our Soto school, Dogen Zenji, there's a little paragraph. I always wondered about this. I'll just read it, because it's, the vehicle of the ancestors is naturally unrestricted. That's the letting go. Why should we expend sustained effort? Surely the whole being is far beyond affliction. Never is it apart from this very place. Sitting fixedly, think of non-thinking. Zazen is just the Dharma gate of ease and joy. So Zazen is the Dharma gate of ease and joy. I have read this over and over again for many, many years, and, you know, sort of worked with a lot of what he was saying, like just never apart, all that. But Zazen being the gate of ease and joy, a lot of times I was just sitting there feeling things I didn't want to feel. You know, anxious, restless, sad, whatever. Sometimes joy too, but what was this ease and joy? But I think that's true. I think it's there if we allow it, if we allow it to rise up and touch us. We can be in that space before we get complicated. We can be in that space of the perceptions of our senses. We can just breathe. You know, the counting of the breath is a way to focus, of course, but our breath tells us so much. It's the main movement of our mind in Zazen. The mind and the breath are exactly the same. It's just a different way of experiencing. When our body is relaxed and our mind is starting to relax, our breath literally, like a little baby who's just sitting there and breathing. We didn't think of babies not cogitating that much, but their bellies are breathing. The breath literally falls into the belly. And that's why partially why we take this posture, so we can have this ease of breath. Fall in there and just be relaxed. And when we're doing that, we're sharing our breath with everywhere, everything. You can feel that. I wanted to speak about just the change in breath. If you notice, for instance, like before this talk, I was sitting there and noticing my breath was like up here and squeezed. And that to me is like, oh, I'm anxious. So my breath told me literally how I was feeling. I think I knew, but you know what I mean. It can tell you all that. Or in deep concentration, the breath slows down naturally, it just does. So these things are intimately, it is our mind, not intimately, it is our mind. So this is a very subtle effort that we're making in Zazen. I used to think it was a big effort because I'm very twitchy and attentive. For me, it was a big effort to sit still. But it actually is a very subtle effort to turn towards Zazen, the breath, and stillness. It's a way of calming ourselves because we need that. We can live through that, actually. We don't have to caffeinate ourselves beyond belief to function. We can actually live through a calm being. There's a wonderful book, you may have all heard of it. It's called Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind by Shunryu Suzuki, who founded the San Francisco Zen Center many, many, many years ago. And it's not a beginner's book, but beginners often read it, and I did. It went right past me. A lot of it's accessible. But he really has some very deep teachings in there. He has a chapter called Breathing, and I love this chapter. And I'm just going to read just a teeny bit about it, from it. In Zazen, our mind always follows our breathing. When we inhale, the air comes in into the inner world. When we exhale, the air goes out into the outer world. The inner world is limitless, and the outer world is also limitless. Air comes in and goes out like someone passing through a swinging door. If you think I breathe, the I is extra. There is no you to say I. The breath just moves, that is all. When your mind is pure and calm enough to follow this movement, there is nothing, no I, no world, inner or outer, no mind, no body, just a swinging door. All that exists is the movement of the breathing. Each of us is in the midst of myriad worlds. What you are doing is just sitting, being aware of the movement of the universe. This is the fundamental activity of the universe. We are in the center of the world, always, always, moment after moment. So we are completely dependent on everything. I'm adding that. And independent, personal, and absolute. If you have this kind of existence, you have absolute freedom. So summer invites us out of ourselves in this continuous breathing of all creatures and all senses. And I encourage you to all allow your practice of Zazen to be the heart of your activity this summer. The powerful, small little body of the tree frog will only last a few more weeks, and then I don't know. But it shows me of being in the midst of the center of the world and the bravery and the courage. Being, what is that? This is the mystery for you to unravel in your own time and your own body and mind. And I want to thank you all for participating today and coming to the monastery. And thank you so much for your practice.
Thank you for listening. To find out more about ZMM's programs, retreats, and residency, please visit us online at zmm.org.